Preliminary Report, State of Connecticut, Public Document Number 6, Report of the Adjutant General to the Governor for the 2 years ended September 30, 1918, printed in compliance with statute, Hartford, published by the state, 1919. Publication approved by the Board of Control. The Journal Print, Rockville, Connecticut. State of Connecticut Biennial Report of the Adjutant General. Adjutant General's Office, Hartford, September 30, 1918. To His Excellency the Governor. Sir, in accordance with Chapter 11, Section 13, Militia Law, I respectfully submit herewith a report, quote, on the condition of the National Guard and such other matters relating to the militia during the past 2 years, unquote. It was stated in my last report, September 30, 1916, the only state troops of the Connecticut National Guard at their home stations at that time were 13 companies Connecticut Coast Artillery, the 1st Separate Company Infantry, Colored, and the Connecticut Naval Militia. All other troops were in the federal service, on duty at the Mexican border. As indicated in my last report, federal recognition having been withdrawn from the 10th Militia Field Artillery, that regiment was disbanded, excepting Batteries E and F, by General Orders No. 32, AGO, Adjutant General's Office, Connecticut, Series 1916, to take effect December 1, 1916. Batteries E and F were ordered by the Department of War to the Mexican border, El Paso, Texas, where they remained until early spring of 1917. All of the Connecticut troops were finally relieved from duty at the Mexican border and returned to their home stations. They were mustered out of federal service as follows. Machine Gun Company and Company C and M, 1st Infantry, October 19, 1916. Companies D and G, 1st Infantry, October 21, 1916. Companies A, B, F, H, and K, 1st Infantry, October 23, 1916. Company L, 1st Infantry, October 24, 1916. Companies E and I, 1st Infantry, October 25, 1916. Sanitary Detachment, 1st Infantry, October 26, 1916. Ambulance Company, Signal Corps, Troop B, Cavalry and Headquarters Company, 1st Infantry, October 28, 1916. Supply Company, 1st Infantry, October 30, 1916. Troop A, Cavalry, November 4, 1916. Field Hospital, Headquarters Company, Machine Gun Company, Companies B, C, D, E, and F, 2nd Infantry, November 8, 1916. Sanitary Detachment, Companies A, G, H, and M, 2nd Infantry, November 9, 1916. Supply Company, 2nd Infantry, November 14, 1916. Battery E, Field Artillery, March 17, 1917. Battery F, Field Artillery, March 16 and 19, 1917. Regular weekly drills were ordered to be resumed by all organizations upon their return to the state, in accordance with General Orders No. 28, AGO, Connecticut, October 19, 1916. On February 14, 1917, the governor received a request from the commanding general, Eastern Department, General Wood, for military guards for the protection of important railroad bridges throughout the state, to prevent their being blown up by alien enemies. In compliance with this request, the 9th Company, Connecticut Coast Artillery, was ordered out in Special Orders No. 30, AGO, Connecticut, February 15, 1917, and the 13th Company, Connecticut Coast Artillery, was ordered out for the same duty in Special Orders No. 42, AGO, Connecticut, March 2, 1917. On April 3, 1917, upon request of the Secretary of War, the 2nd and 4th Companies, Connecticut Coast Artillery, were ordered to be mobilized for federal service and to relieve the 9th and 13th Companies on bridge duty. See Paragraph 1, Special Order Number 67, and Paragraph 8, Special Orders Number 69, AGO, Connecticut, March 31st and April 3, 1917, respectively. On March 25, 1917, Special Orders Number 61, AGO, Connecticut, upon the call of the President for troops of the National Guard, the 1st Regiment Connecticut Infantry was ordered to mobilize for federal service at 7 a.m., March 26, 1917. On March 28, 1917, Special Orders Number 64, AGO, Connecticut, the 2nd Regiment Connecticut Infantry was ordered to mobilize same day for federal service. On March 30, 1917, Special Orders Number 66, AGO, Connecticut, Batteries E and F, Connecticut Field Artillery, were ordered to mobilize same day for federal service. On April 6, 1917, Special Orders Number 72, AGO, Connecticut, the Naval Militia of the state was ordered to mobilize for federal service at 7 a.m., April 7, 1917. The Naval Militia left for the Boston Navy Yard on April 9, 1917, at 7 a.m. All of the land forces ordered out remained at their home stations for some time for the purpose of recruiting to war strength. The 2nd Regiment, Connecticut Infantry, was encamped at Yale Field, New Haven, soon after mobilization, and the 1st Regiment, Connecticut Infantry, after having been in camp on the State Armory grounds at Hartford for some time, went into camp on July 23, 1917, at Pratt Field, bounded on the Yale Field, New Haven, where the 2nd Infantry was in camp. On April 13, 1917, to complete the organization of the cavalry quota of the National Guard of the state, as was required by the War Department, troops L and M were ordered to be organized in General Orders Number 19, AGO, Connecticut. It should be noted here that the 4 troops of cavalry were, after entering the federal service, organized into and are now known as the 101st Machine Gun Battalion, Companies A, B, C, and D. On July 1, 1917, in General Orders Number 34, AGO, Connecticut, all the troops not previously entered into federal service were ordered to mobilize for federal service on July 25, 1917, at 7 a.m. These troops are in camp as follows. Cavalry, July 27 and 28th. Field Hospital, Ambulance, Signal Corps, and 1st Separate Company, Infantry, Colored, all to Niantic, Connecticut, July 28th. Coast Artillery to Fort H.G. Wright, Fisher's Island, New York, on July 28, 1917. In accordance with General Orders Number 90, War Department, July 12, 1917, all organizations of the National Guard, excepting the Naval Militia, were drafted into the Federal Service as of and from the 5th day of August, 1917, and stood, quote, discharged from the militia, unquote, from that date. This included a detachment of the Quartermaster Corps, newly organized and not heretofore mentioned. The Naval Militia does not come under the draft, but all its members, before entering the federal service, were required to subscribe to the oath of the National Naval Volunteers, and at the completion of the war, they may be placed on an inactive status in the Naval Reserve Force of the United States and not returned to the Naval Militia of the state. I beg to state here that Army regulations require copies of initial muster rolls of all militia organizations mustered into the federal service to be furnished to the Adjutant General's office of their respective states. These rolls were received as soon as each organization was mustered after the first call in March 1917. After the initial muster into the federal service, commanding officers are not required to furnish any further rolls or reports to their respective states. Hundreds of men were enlisted into the National Guard between the time when first called, mustered, into the federal service, on August 5, 1917, the date of the final draft. This office has made every possible effort to obtain copies of enlistment papers of men enlisted up to August 5th, and the numbers accredited in this report to each organization as in service on date of draft is based on enlistment papers on file at this office. In reply to a request on the Adjutant General, U.S. Army, for a loan of enlistment papers, or muster rolls, after the troops were drafted, to enable this office to copy them and thus obtain an absolute correct record of all men enlisted in the several organizations of the National Guard in this war, this office was informed that the papers could not be loaned, but the files would be accessible to any person sent to Washington by the state of Connecticut for the purpose of copying such records. It appears now that this course will have to be pursued after the close of the war, or as soon as the present rush of work in the Adjutant General's Department in Washington has sufficiently subsided to allow this matter that requires time and attention. Following is the endorsement to the request of the Adjutant General, U.S. Army, and also a letter from the Navy Department on the foregoing subject. First Independent, War Department, AGO, Adjutant General's Office, to the Adjutant General, State of Connecticut, Hartford. Under the rules and regulations of the War Department, the enlistment papers mentioned cannot be loaned for the purpose stated, as such records are being constantly referred to by this office in the transaction of official business. If, however, a duly accredited representative of the Adjutant General, State of Connecticut, be sent to Washington, he will be permitted to make copies of such of the above-mentioned enlistment papers as are on file in this office. Signed, H.P. McCain, the Adjutant General. Navy Department, Bureau of Navigation, Washington, D.C. 2. Adjutant General, State of Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut. From Bureau of Navigation. Subject, Number of Enlisted Personnel. Referring to so much of your letter of the enlisted force in the regular Navy and NV and Coast Guard from the declaration of war to September 30, 1918, the Bureau regrets that the information cannot be furnished at present. A rearrangement of the system of keeping statistics made necessary at this time by reason of the number of calls from states, congressional districts, cities, towns, and villages throughout the United States is in the process of installation. It is probable the work will not be completed for at least 3 months. If you will apply again about March 1, 1919, the Bureau will be glad to furnish you as far as possible the information you desire. Signed, C.B. Hatch, Jr., by direction. On August 22, 1917, owing to the increase of men in a regiment to war strength, 95 officers and 3,604 men, the 1st and 2nd Regiments, Connecticut Infantry, were consolidated, and that regiment is now known as the 102nd U.S. Infantry, assigned to the 26th Division. The regiment was sent to France the following month under the command of Colonel Ernest L. Isbell, former commander of the 2nd Connecticut Infantry, and Colonel Richard J. Goodman, former commander of the 1st Connecticut Infantry, with 34 officers and 270 enlisted men, including a sanitary detachment, all composed of the surplus of the old 1st and 2nd Connecticut Infantry, was sent to Camp Green, Charlotte, North Carolina, and later to Camp Wadsworth, Spartanburg, South Carolina, and this is now known as the 58th Pioneer Infantry. The first separate company, Connecticut Infantry, colored, was sent to Camp Stewart, Newport News, Virginia, and is now known as Company M, 372nd Infantry. The Connecticut Coast Artillery has been split up. Part of the officers and men have been assigned to batteries now in France, and others to companies of Coast Guard artillery on duty at Fort H.G. Wright and other forts on the American coast. The Connecticut Naval Militia, now known as part of the U.S. Naval Reserve Forces, has also been split up, and officers and men distributed among ships and navy yards in the U.S. Navy. The Connecticut Field Hospital Company, now known as Field Hospital No. 3, 101st Sanitary Train. The Connecticut Ambulance Company, now known as Ambulance Company No. 3, 101st Sanitary Train. The Connecticut Field Signal Troops, now known as Radio Company 326th Field Signal Battalion. Batteries E and F, Comp Field Artillery, now known as Batteries E and F, 103rd U.S. Field Artillery. The Connecticut Cavalry, now known as the 101st Machine Gun Battalion. The major part of the 1st and 2nd Connecticut Infantry, now known as the 102nd U.S. Infantry, are all in France. From all accounts, by the Associated Press, the Connecticut troops have been engaged in the fiercest battle since their arrival in France and have been highly commended by General Pershing, the commander-in-chief of the American forces in France, on their splendid conduct and bravery. Captain Arthur F. Locke of Hartford, formerly captain of Company F, 1st Connecticut Infantry, later captain of Company M, 102nd U.S. Infantry, was the first Connecticut National Guard officer reported killed in action, and Major George J. Raw, also of Hartford, formerly major of the 1st Connecticut Infantry, later major of the 102nd U.S. Infantry, was also reported killed in action. The state of Connecticut has all reasons to be proud of its National Guard. It was one of the first selected by the War Department for service in France. Its efficiency and bravery is of the highest, and in history, it will go down among the best military forces in the United States in this World War. The following is a table of organizations giving the strength of each in officers and enlisted men drafted into federal service on August 5, 1917, based on records and copies of enlistment papers on file at this office, date of draft. Recommendations. The national government, not having decided upon or committed itself to a fixed military policy, although it is understood that the General Staff of the Army has a well-thought-out plan for presentation to Congress when called for, it would appear to be inadvisable for the state of Connecticut, by its legislature, to adopt legislation at the coming session determining a military policy for this state. It would, in my opinion, be wiser to delay such action until it is known what will be required by and of the state. It may, however, be necessary to change existing law in the state to accommodate it to peace conditions should the present war terminate before or during the session of the legislature in 1919. On June 3, 1916, the President of the United States approved an act of Congress which corrected any inconsistencies in our military laws, especially those which related to the National Guard. One section of this act, namely Section 3, providing for the drafting of the National Guard into the service of the United States, has been construed by the Secretary of War to mean that when troops of the National Guard have been so drafted, they do not return when released from federal service to the service of the state. It is understood that this was not intended by Congress, but the Secretary of War has so determined it. Guided by your keen foresight, the legislature of 1917 enacted legislation which provided a temporary force for the existing emergency, namely the Home Guard, now known as the State Guard, and the Military Emergency Board has, under your direction, built up a large and efficient force composed of some of the very best men in the several communities where companies have been organized and maintained. This force has proven to be a valuable asset to the state. Congress undoubtedly will, as soon after the present war is ended, and more likely before, devote its attention to legislation which will establish a fixed military policy for the United States. Should Congress enact legislation providing for compulsory military education, or more properly speaking, military service, it would then appear that the state would only require a military force sufficiently large for state protection. In this event, appropriate legislation might be enacted making permanent such portion of the State Guard as would be considered necessary. Should Congress, on the other hand, decide not to adopt a plan of compulsory military education and service, and to continue the plan provided in the Act of June 3, 1916, then the state should and must continue to be as patriotic in the future as it has been in the past, and must, as soon as possible, proceed to the building up of its portion of the National Guard for the protection of our common country and the safeguarding of our nation. If we are to rely on the National Guard for national emergencies, Connecticut must build in the future as wisely as it has done in the past, As evidenced, the National Guard of Connecticut was considered by the War Department fit to be placed in the 1st Division of National Guard Troops, the 26th, to be ordered overseas, and they were amongst the first National Guard troops to be landed on French soil. And today, all Connecticut National Guard troops, with the exception of the nucleus of the 58th Pioneer Infantry, are serving in France. And more, these officers and men have proven by the supreme test, namely service in war, their fitness, and that the War Department made no mistake in selecting them for this great honor to Connecticut and to themselves is also proven. They have stood the test, fought nobly and well, and many will never come back. But there was never a waiver. Always in the front, ready and eager for every call. And when the history of the state of Connecticut in this war is written, as undoubtedly it will be, due credit will be given these men who hesitated not, but gave the best there was in them, even life when necessary, ungrudgingly for their country. Should Congress fail to provide some plan which will relieve the several states from raising and training national troops, then Connecticut must, and I know it will be ready to do its part in building up a new National Guard, which, if necessary, should it ever require it, will be just as ready and efficient as the one now fighting in France for the cause of liberty. Draft. In compliance with your instructions, this office has performed the duties assigned to the Adjutant General in sections 54, 59, 61, 64, 66, 69, 92, 131-104-149, also Part 7, Induction and Mobilization, and Part 9, Disbursement Regulations, of the Selective Service Regulations. The records of this office show that up to date, September 30, 1918, there have been inducted and called for induction from Class 1, General and Limited Service, 29,044. The work of the district and local boards in connection with the work assigned to this office has been very exacting, and the Adjutant General desires at this time to acknowledge and praise the splendid patriotic spirit which has been apparent at all times, always cooperating in every way for the best results. This was exceptionally hard on all at first, by reason of the incompleteness of instructions and regulations. It was new work for all, including the office of the Provost Marshal General. But the results are astonishing in their completeness, and this was only possible by reason of the manifest desire on the part of all to cooperate for the purpose of performing the duties assigned to them, having but one object in view, namely, raising an army. This will go down in the history of Connecticut as another credit mark to the efficiency and patriotism of the state. This office is preparing data, as completely as it is possible to do, as the work goes on for the records of the state, and for use in the preparation of a history of Connecticut in this, the greatest war in the history of the world. Roster of Connecticut Men in the War with Spain. By special act of the General Assembly of the State of Connecticut, January Session, 1915, the Adjutant General was, quote, directed to prepare a roster containing the names and complete military and naval record of the soldiers, sailors, and Marines who were in the service of the United States in the Spanish-American War, Philippine Insurrection, and China Relief Expedition from April 21, 1898 to July 4, 1904, who were credited on the quota from this state, unquote. In order to secure as complete record of each man as possible, more than can be obtained from the muster rolls, the only records on file at this office, a blank form was adopted to be filled out by the veterans of the Spanish-American War or their relatives or friends. More than 2,000 of these forms have been sent to camps and individual Spanish-American War veterans, and nearly 900 have been returned, properly filled out, and further efforts are being made to reach at least the majority of those who were in the military service during that war from this state. It is considered advisable to postpone the printing of the roster until all efforts by this office to get the required data have been exhausted. Badges for veterans of the Spanish-American War. By special acts of the General Assemblies of the State of Connecticut, January Sessions, 1915 and 1917, the Adjutant General was directed to secure an appropriate badge, quote, for each person who served in the Army, Navy, or Marine Corps of the United States in the Spanish-American War, and was credited on the quota from the state. Also, each person who served in the United States Volunteers in said war, and who, at the time of enlistment, was a resident of this state, unquote. The badges have been procured and are stored in the vault in this office. Up to this date, 512 badges have been delivered upon duly certified records of service. Part of them have gone to nearly every state in the Union. The wording of the act above, quoted, differs from the wording of the act directing the roster to be prepared in that badge under the act can be furnished only to, quote, persons who served in the Spanish-American War, unquote, which by declaration and treaty existed from April 21, 1898 to December 10, 1898. I would recommend that the Act of 1915, quote, concerning the distribution of badges to persons who served in the Spanish-American War, unquote, be amended by adding the words Philippine Insurrection and China Relief Expedition from April 21, 1989 to July 4, 1904, as reads the Act of 1915, directing the Adjutant General to prepare a roster of men in the service during that same period. The expense of purchase of badges will not be increased by such amendment. Long Service Medals. The Long Service Medals were awarded under provision of Section 3053, Chapter 185 of the General Statutes, Revision of 1902, as amended to members of the Connecticut National Guard in active service and in good standing, for long and faithful service in the Connecticut National Guard, for terms of 10 years, and each additional 5 years thereafter. These medals are prized very highly by the officers and enlisted men to whom they are awarded and are conducive in keeping many good men in the service for longer periods than they would stay if it were not for the state's recognition by these awards. The following is the number of long service medals awarded to officers and enlisted men to date, September 30, 1918. Medals and clasps awarded at last report, September 30, 1918. 1,218 new awards since last report. Medals for 10 years of service, 24. Clasps in exchange for 15 years of service, 16. Clasps in exchange for 20 years of service, 6. Clasps in exchange for 25 years of service, 1. Total awards since last report, 47. Total awards to date, September 30, 1918, 1,265.